Hello and welcome to On the Preds with me, your host, Alex Doherty of A to Z Sports, and my co-host, Sean Smith, is here as well. We have a lot to tackle this week as we have our very first mailbag show. Busting out the mailbag.
Plus you said tackle because it's football season.
I did say tackle because it is finally football season. And so, but we have a mailbag show today. We have some good questions from people. And we have some answers to provide. And we also have some prizes to give out. That was a really fun part about the Q&A part of this is, Sean, you've got some cool prizes you're going to give people, right?
I do have some cool. Well, I mean, I think they're cool prizes. I mean, it's those things that you get that you're like, you know, this seems like it might be a little strange, but people get really jazzed up about things like a Nashville Predators oven mitt. I don't know why, but that's
a lightsaber.
Lightsabers. That's a throwback. Got a funny lightsaber story too from that game. I can tell maybe down the road, but
I know that these prizes are not much, but we are giving them away as to people for asking good questions, and so we're going to do that sort of towards the end. But before we get started with the mailbag stuff, we do want to announce some dates, some important Preds dates, because we finally have them. If you have not already seen, Rookie Camp opens this week, September 14th. That's a Wednesday. Rookie Camp opens. They have a couple practices. Then they head to North Carolina, where they are doing rookie games. They're playing in rookie games against the Lightning, Panthers, and Hurricanes. Is that right?
I think that's right. That is correct.
And then a week after that, next week, not this week, but next week, the 21st is when full training camp opens. All the Predators will be there, all of the Nashville Predators that you know and love. And then a few days after that, the 26th, the first two preseason games against Florida. That's a doubleheader, kind of the traditional split squad doubleheader that they do. I would strongly suggest people not taking those final results seriously. I see it every year where they lose a game like 6-1 and people are like, oh, God, it's going to be a terrible season, when we realize that, like, there's training camp invites that are out there playing against, like, you know, NHL's players. So please don't take those games seriously. No. The preseason game against Tampa a few days later, and then the preseason game at SC Bern in Switzerland. So at some point between the 30th and September, or in October 3rd, the Predators fly over to Europe and they're going to go to Bern and play against SC Bern, which is a team there in Bern, Switzerland. And there is, then 4 days later, the regular season opener against the Sharks in Prague, Czech Republic, a city that I've been to and is a very cool city.
I've never been. Sounds cool. I'd like to go.
It's amazing, actually. It's really cool. I was there at Christmas time, and it was so much fun. But all of that aside, let's go ahead and dive into these questions, because I think that there's so many. I don't want to risk missing any time answering people's questions. And Sean, you're going to kind of take the lead on this because you gathered them all up. You collected all the questions, you put them in a bag, and now you've got them here.
I've got them. There were a few that kind of ran parallel to one another. So I've tried to kind of group those together so we're not, you know, answering something, then coming back to it and answering it again. I think if I read all the questions that line up a little bit, we can address all those issues at once. So, but there's a couple here that I really like that were kind of standalone, that didn't have other questions that kind of ran with them. So let's start with those, if that's okay. First question is from a Twitter user at Ishtar Fan, clearly a fan of cinema there. And the question is, which player with a hefty contract gets moved next summer to free up the cap space the Preds will need to re-sign their RFAs? Given the dearth of good defensemen becoming UFAs then, I think one of Ekholm or McDonough could draw a lot of interest around the league. Great question.
Okay, so there's a lot here. First of all, I did see this question beforehand, and I really wanted to go in blind to a lot of these, but I'm glad I looked at this one first, because I think the premise of the question, I don't necessarily agree with the premise of the question. And the premise of the question is that they don't have enough money to sign their RFAs next year. So just a quick recap or a quick rundown of what they actually have next year. They have right now on the books about $12 million in cap space, which is not a whole lot, But when you look at the players that are actually RFAs next year, that are ones that they would want to sign, you've got Tanner Jeannot, definitely going to have to sign him.
Yeah.
Dante Fabbro, question mark, and Alex Carrier, possible question mark. Those are the big RFAs that are at the NHL level. After that, you've got Cody Glass. That is, we have no idea what his value is going to be because we don't even know where he's going to play. I mean, if he plays in AHL this year, his RFA status next year is going to be like, he's going to be very easy to sign.
Right.
Like less than a million. I think he'll play at the NHL level. But so those are your four. There's a few others. There's like, you know, Connor Ingram's an RFA, Devin Cooley, Tomas Fomaka, Tommy Novak is an RFA. And then there's guys like John Leonard, who no one knows who that is. So there are really four names. There's Tanner Jeannot, there's Dante Fabbro, there's Alex Carrier, and I'm going to put Cody Glass there too. You got $12 million to sign all those guys.
You think you can sign them for $12 million?
Maybe not, but I don't think that you have to move a lot. And also, I think that there's a chance that they don't try to that they don't qualify. Maybe like what happens if they don't qualify Fabbro? Because Fabro's qualifying offer would have to be at least what he makes this year, which is, let me go to it. It is $2.4 million. If he's not worth $2.4 million or more, they're not going to qualify him. They're not going to give him a qualifying offer. And therefore, Dante Fabro's gone. Maybe they find a way to trade him. Maybe he's just not there. So, again, that is based on Dante Fabbro of last year's team. So maybe he's like, you know, total different player this year and is great and they have to re-sign him. If that's the case, yeah, they're going to kind of run up against it because I think Tanner Jeannot makes around 3 to 4. Ceiling is 4. 3 is probably like the minimum it's going to take to sign him. And Fabbro probably, let's assume that he increases his performance this year, 3. So that's 6 to 7 million. Yeah. Alex Carrier probably like 2, I'm guessing. Yeah. 2 or 3, yeah. Maybe. So there you go. You're right there. And then Cody Glass, don't know. So it's close, but I don't think they have to move a big contract. I don't think they have to move Ekholm or McDonough.
So what you've done, Alex, and you know, I know that you have a bit of a background as a teacher, maybe not as expansive as mine. What you've done is creatively avoid the test question by answering with a non-answer. You were awarded no points.
Okay, you answer the question then. I did not answer the question. You answer the question.
Well, I mean, you gave a reason why you didn't have to answer the question. And that in and of itself is not an answer to the question. If I'm grading this, you know, if this is a test grade, it's the end of course test, and you have to answer this question, you have to pass this class to graduate from high school, then you failed and you're going to be back next year, or you're going to have to go to summer school, honestly. But look, okay, if you have to get rid of what we're calling a hefty contract here, okay, if you have to get rid of a hefty contract, Graham here, Ishtar fan, offers up Ekholm or McDonough. Okay, I don't know if that's what's going to happen. I mean,
well, which of those two I would trade, but you go first.
Okay. Well, I don't know if it's necessarily one of those two. I think he's offering that up as it's. Okay. I think one of these two would be a good. You could trade them and get something good in return for them. And I don't disagree. I agree with what he's saying. I'm sure you could trade either one of those guys and get a pretty good bounty. You know, maybe some quality players, some younger players at a good price. So you're still freeing up cap space or keeping the cap space clear. But, you know, I think they keep giving Ryan Johansson chances and he's starting to prove that he's worth his contract. And that's, you know, a good thing. But I also think that's someone that could be very appealing to a team that was maybe looking to make a pretty deep cup run because he has experience. He's got the leadership credentials as well. Not that that's an expiring contract by any means. There's still a few years left on it. But I feel like at some point, just due to the fact that they left him and Duchesne unprotected in the expansion draft, that might be a contract they're willing to see if they can get something in return from.
That would leave a pretty big hole on your second line. And I could see that happening if, say, Cody Glass comes in and is like, you know, top nine material at least. And then he's ready to move into that position. But man, that is a huge leap in advancement if he was able to do that. If Cody Glass this next season was to make Ryan Johansson expendable, that would be like almost a miracle. Like that would be pretty amazing if that happened.
Well, I agree.
Otherwise, you've got a massive hole on your second line.
You talk about this point 1 year ago, and you've got an unprotected and available for the taking Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene out there for the Seattle Kraken.
Yeah.
They don't take either one of them. I mean, and again, both guys come back and they respond with quality years. I mean, I'm not saying that, oh, they should move on. I'm just saying that clearly that's something they've given thought to before. And if Johansson doesn't come back and have another great season, maybe he could be worth it to somebody who needs a little bit of veteran experience.
Yeah. Okay. Good answer. I think that's a good first question.
Yeah. I
like it.
You didn't tell me who you would trade
between McDonough and Ekholm.
Yeah.
I think I would trade Ekholm.
Wow.
I think Ryan McDonough is still really good.
Oh, I know, but you know, there's just they're
almost the same age. I mean, like McDonough's 1 year older than Ekholm.
Okay. I'm not saying it's an age thing. Think about all the things Matthias Ekholm's done for the team, not just the team. What has he done for you personally, Alex?
He's done
nothing. Think about the hours and hours of joy he's brought into your life.
He has done nothing for me personally.
I'm going to write that down. But,
I could see it happening. Anyways, all right, let's see the next question.
Okay, all right. This one is a friend of the show, @prof_rev, or the name Going Joanna Mode. This is a good question. Mark Borowiecki had a new contract before the season was even over, but the team's move since then suggests that he might not be getting a lot of ice time. A sign of just how valuable he is off ice, or do you think he'll be his old bruiser self but with less ice time? I think it's an interesting question here.
Yeah, Borowiecki, I don't know what's going to happen this year because it looked to me like he would be – I mean, before the trade for Jeremy Lauzon, it was like he was – because he had signed that contract mid-year and it looked like he was just going to be the guy next year. But then they make that trade at the deadline for Lauzon. I'm not sure what happened in between him signing that contract. And I guess they just realized, like, you know, he's 33 – he's had injuries. He's going to be in and out of the lineup. I think he's going to be have a pretty low impact season in terms of just when you look at the end of the year stats. Mark Borowiecki's not going to be in there a lot. I bet he plays 15 to 20 games and has probably quite a few penalty minutes for not many games, probably not many points, maybe like a couple or something. That's probably it. I think he's there for his locker room presence. Everyone in that locker room loves Mark Borowiecki. I think that's the primary reason. So I'm forgetting the question. I guess was the question, is he going to be gone?
Is it a sign of how valuable he is off ice, or do you think he'll be back to his old bruiser self?
It's definitely a sign of how valuable he is. And again, I think something happened in between when they signed him to that contract and when trade deadline came that they were like, we got to get someone younger in that role now. And so they got Lauzon.
I think you're probably right. I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you on any aspect of what you just said. And I think that's kind of what you saw happen is I think this is a guy that has such a good rapport with all of the guys on the team, probably everybody on the staff as well, that they're not willing to let him go. He's worth it to keep around. I'd much rather, I mean, I know I'm probably going to hurt some people's feelings out there, but I'd much rather have him in the locker room and not on the ice than, say, Cody McLeod come playoff time. Because what it comes down to is I think he's a more competent player than Cody McLeod, and I think if you have to put him in, if he needs to go out there and skate, he's going to do a better job than someone in that capacity. So, Lauzon, upgrade as far as being younger goes, but – we're still talking about the defensive puzzle for this team going into next season. And so, I mean, they have seven defenders. I don't necessarily know that you know, you want to say, well, he's not going to see much ice time. 15 to 20 games may be accurate. I think, you know, he fits into that third pairing, and it's probably on a rotating as needed basis, as opposed to he's a part of the start every night plan. He's probably looking somewhat, he's looking like someone that they can plug in when they need to. And if they don't need to, then they're not going to.
I could see him playing in some key matchups, like on a Saturday night or something, and going out there to start a ruckus with the other team. Maybe like, you know, at home against Chicago or something. Maybe on the road in St. Louis, just get him. I don't know. There's a lot of opportunities, but yeah, it does say how good, how quality of an off ice kind of guy he is.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, you just mentioned St. Louis, and I don't know if you remember, but we, of course, had to go to St. Louis this weekend. Do you remember me telling you that?
Yeah. You went to St. Louis.
Yeah, my son had his hockey tournament. It wasn't really a tournament. It was a friendly is what it was, and it was really interesting. It was an eye-opener, I'll say that much, because my son's team had played, you know, they practiced together for 2 weeks. They went up against a team. They played them 4 times over 3 days. That's been skating together for 3 years.
Wow.
It was a slaughter fest. Absolute just devastation. But you know, the coach said, look, this is something we need to do early in the season so they get an idea of what the expectation is. So when they get back to practice, they can focus on what so they know the expectation. And I think they all came away seeing that, honestly.
Are we talking Preds first round against Colorado slaughter? Is that what we're talking about? Like, was that the level?
Worse.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking like, I don't know. Like, I think they stopped counting goals at like 12 just to not make our kids feel bad, but we never got more than one. I'll say that.
Yikes. Okay. So, all right.
But I'll tell you, the worst part of the trip, you know what it was?
What was that?
It had to have been sleeping in the hotel bed. But actually, that probably takes a second to trying to sleep in a car on the way back. That was rough. I'm going to tell you, you know, what I really wish I could do, I need to relax the back. I need to head down to 2020 Glen Echo Road right there in Green Hills. Yeah. I need to go talk to one of the sleep agents on hand, maybe talk to Glenn. He owns the store, and he'll probably be happy to tell me about the four pillars of wellness. Do you remember what they are?
Healthy sleep.
Healthy sleep. Healthy body. Healthy work. And healthy mind. And I tell you, I've been to the Relax the Back store, and it is, I don't know how to explain it, but when you walk in, you just feel this sense of peace and calm come over your back. And I'm not saying that jokingly, but he's going to have you try a few things out there that make you realize how quickly your back can get back to feeling great. You know, they've got a lot of customized comfort options for the office, for relaxing at home, and for sleeping at night. Ergonomic office chairs, zero gravity chairs, and those are all perfect for getting your spine in the correct position so you can work better every day. And I tell you, that's what I needed after a couple of nights in a hotel bed and a rough night or a rough day trying to sleep in the middle row of a minivan. Telling you what, you gotta.
Sometimes life happens, and you gotta do what you gotta do, and you gotta recover. You gotta recover from whatever you've been doing, and relax the back is a great way to do that. I would strongly suggest you go there to figure that out.
I think I'm going to. And anyone else in my position, I'd say head on down to 2020 Glen Echo Road in Green Hills. Talk to Glenn at the Relax the Back store.
Perfect. Next question.
Okay, next question. Now, there's two here that I'm going to keep together. Okay, I'm going to read them both. All right. And you'll see why I'm keeping them together. Okay, so one is by Twitter user at Nikki Yeehaw 18. And it says, goalie question, where do you see the goalies slotting in this year, given Ingram's overall development and having Lankinen as a backup now? Also, we've got one from at Kyle Fleming 326. With the signing of Lankinen, what do you think that means for the future of Ingram and the Preds organization? Does he now become a trade piece since we have Askarov in the prospect pool as well? These are good goalie questions. Let's talk about them.
Yeah. So I don't want to get too far ahead of things.
Okay. No, I don't think you should.
But I have this sneaking suspicion. Okay. It is based on very little. It is based on nothing more than instinct, just kind of like what I'm seeing and hearing and just kind of my feeling about the situation.
Mm-hmm.
I would not be shocked if we saw Yaroslav Askarov in Nashville this season at some point.
Whoa. Wow.
There seems to be a trend right now of Askarov being more, I mean, he's going to start in Milwaukee. I'm very confident in that.
Right.
I just have this feeling like that we're going to see him because I have very little faith in Kevin Lankinen and Connor Ingram. Great story. I hope that he can perform a little better, but like, I just don't, I mean, he certainly doesn't have the ceiling that Askarov does. Now, if Connor Ingram comes in, has several good, several good starts in place of Saros or Lankinen, I guess. Maybe we don't, but I just have this weird feeling that Askarov is just really wowed this Predators staff and that they're thinking maybe we see this kid this year.
Really?
I don't know why. I don't know what has got me thinking that, but that's just kind of my thought.
I mean, you hear so much all the time about how, you know, goalies are weird. Goalies take longer. You're not going to get a 20-year-old goalie in the NHL and have them see any kind of success. And, you know, there is something to what you're saying, though, because the organization is definitely very, very high on him right now. We've seen him in camps and we've seen him in gameplay situations. And it's I think the word I would use to describe him is raw, you know?
Yeah.
I think he's very raw. I think, you know, granted, time with a good goalie coach is really helpful, but, you know, coaching's great, but getting some logging some minutes there between the pipes is probably going to be a big deal too. So how long does he stay in Milwaukee before he ends up in Nashville? That's the real question. I don't think they're waiting on, you know, 2 or 3 years to develop anymore. I don't think that's something they're interested in at all. I think you're right. I think they want to see him in Nashville soon. I don't know if I'm as confident as you are that he's coming this year. He's coming.
So part of me thinks like, okay, so you know that they had the NHLPA had the rookie premiere recently, mm-hmm. early yeah. September. And you know who the Predator sent to that?
Yep. Askarov.
Askarov, yeah. So, I mean, they have to send somebody, and I'm not sure the rules on who they have to send or what that's, you know, what the requirements are. But I will say this. Knowing something about how hockey cards work, and specifically about the NHLPA and Upper Deck, because that's part mm-hmm. of what that is it's the rookie shoot. It's where they take the photos of the player in their jerseys for the hockey card. So that what that means is that they are assuming that Askarov is going to be one of the premier rookies. It's hard to explain without getting into the card nerd side of this, but basically he's going to be one of the premier rookies featured in right. Upper Deck products for this season. But there's a rule in the NHLPA that they cannot print those cards until that player actually plays in a game.
Hmm.
So when I saw that he was there, I kind of thought, you know what? I wonder if that means that they are assuming, because Upper Deck wouldn't have wanted him there if
right he, if they couldn't print the cards. Yeah,
they can't print the cards if they were going to have to wait till 2023. So I just, that's one of the things that makes me think it. And so now he could wait until later. He might not be until like the way they release the hockey cards, it's like kind of in stages and there's two series and series two comes out like the second half of the season. Maybe he makes his debut. If he makes just one start, that's all he needs.
Well, now, I don't
think preseason counts.
Well, I'm curious. I was curious. So while you were explaining, I did some looking because I think I can think of a very memorable rookie showcase situation involving another Predators rookie that made some waves as the human rocket ship.
Yeah.
So if we want to talk about Ryan Ellis, you know, he was at the 2011, he was the Preds representative in the 2011 rookie showcase. And you're thinking, well, that's when he got drafted. It makes sense. But he did come in and play 32 games in the NHL that season and 3 games in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Even though he spent 29 games in Milwaukee, and then the next season split 32 and 32 games between the two. I mean, it makes perfect sense. They wouldn't want someone to be there and do all of this work and take all these pictures to not be able to put out the cards.
And again, I'm like fairly certain that the rule is still in place that they have to play at least one game before they can print the cards. I know that's how it used to be. I know that for a long time that was the case. And they've had the Upper Deck's been the official trading card of the NHL for like 15 years now or something. So it's been a while. I don't see a reason why that would not be the case anymore. So anyways, just throwing that out there. I think that's something to consider. Back to the original questions. I do not think highly of Kevin Lankinen, Connor Ingram. I think highly of him, but I don't think that he's really probably there yet. And that's what got me thinking about Askarov. So I think he'll start in Milwaukee. I think that's pretty certain. But then unless that goes terribly, would not be shocked to see him play this year.
Interesting. Well, and I look too. It's amazing this internet thing, Alex. I've recently discovered it's just insane. You can find so much information on it. It says, here's what it says here. I just looked this up, and this came out in 2021. It talks about Upper Deck revealing the checklist for the rookie exchange cards.
Yeah.
It says, the NHLPA has a rule where Upper Deck cannot produce a rookie card for a player until they have skated in an official NHL game. A special exception was granted this year, allowing Alexis Lafreniere to appear live in packs, but the remainder of rookies recently drafted had rookie exchange cards issued in MVP and artifacts.
Yeah, so, see, but that's because he was the number one pick. Like,
okay.
Askarov wasn't the number one pick. Like that's probably only because he was the number one pick.
He wasn't even the pick last year.
The other thing is now we're getting straight up into card nerd central, which is But the other reason Upper Deck did that is because Lafreniere had an autograph exclusive with Leaf.
Oh.
So they only thing they could print were cards. So Lafreniere, his autographs were in Leaf products. I'm pretty sure I'm right about that.
You're probably right. I don't know many people who know as much about this as you do. So
I'm pretty sure that's right. Yeah. So he was in. I'm not sure about that actually.
Well,
no, I'm thinking of now. Dang it, I'm thinking of Kaapo Kakko. Okay, I'm wrong about that. So that's not why. Maybe it's just because they were pretty sure he was going to appear at some point, and so they wanted him to be. It has to do with whether the card is live and whether it's a redemption or whether it's like actually in the packs. So it's not really auto. I was thinking of Kaapo Kakko. I think he was in Leaf. But anyways,
interesting.
But having said all that, that's part of why I think it's likely that he could make a start this year.
Yeah, no, I still think you're right. I don't know if he's coming to stay. I think he could be here for a few games. You look at the circumstances surrounding, say, Connor Ingram's Nashville debut. You know, it was a very particular set of circumstances that led to it. I don't think that Askarov is in that situation. I think it's more of a, we want to see this guy in Nashville. This guy is electrifying. He's exciting. People are excited about him. If he can go to Milwaukee and be solid there, let's give him a chance in Nashville and see what he can do.
Connor, here's another one for you. Connor Ingram, he made his debut October 24th. Excuse me, October 24th last year. Connor Ingram was one of the Predators included in Upper Deck products last year. Then the release date was after that. So the only reason he was in there is because of that. Rem Pitlick was another one. Rem Pitlick, remember him?
Yeah, I do.
Rem Pitlick was he made his debut earlier that season, whatever year that was, and then he was in Upper Deck products. Anyway, so there we go. All right, that was a good question. Let's move on to another one.
Okay. So this is interesting because there are, I mean, I've got four more questions. Three of them are all adjacent, and I don't necessarily think that one of them is adjacent enough. We need to ask it together with the other. So let me do these two. and then we can answer this other one. And then I've got another. Okay, so this is from Twitter user at Jacob Lee Smith. It says, if you were in charge, how would you assemble the fourth line? Feels like there are many options for only one or two spots, which I definitely agree with that. In fact, I believe I have written about it at length. And then another question, very similar, from Twitter user at Michael Made It, says, where do you think Tolvin and Glass and Tomasino slot in the lineup to begin the year? Top six, bottom six, or Milwaukee? So I feel like we can answer those in conjunction with one another.
Okay.
You go first. Okay, I'll go first. So we're talking about, let's talk about the fourth line. So it feels like there are many options for only one or two spots. And so now the other question talks about Tolvin and Glass and Tomasino. I've said numerous times, I think Tomasino is going to be the guy to step up and fill that vacant spot on the second line. It's probably going to consist of him and Niederreiter on the wings of, I'm assuming, Ryan Johansson. I think that's going to happen pretty fast. I think that, and I could be wrong, I think Tomasino has had a big offseason. I think he's worked extra hard to get to where he needs to be. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people early, and I think he's going to not just make a case for that spot, but I don't think there's going to be any competition. So that's my bold prediction there. But let's talk about Glass and let's talk about Tolvanen. Okay. The Preds have been playing Michael McCarron, who we've noted is known for two things, his impressive stats on the inches above 6 feet and also at taking some pretty bad stick penalties. That being said, I've said before, I think there is an upgrade available at center on the fourth line, and I think that is Cody Glass. That's where I'd like to see him. That's where I think he should end up. I don't know if that's what's going to happen, but I'll also say that I think Elie Tolvanen, I think he's had a lot of shots at the second line. I think it hasn't paid off, but I think he has demonstrated that he is a very good forward when it comes to playing defensively while also still having, you know, a good shot and kind of being a threat offensively. So I think he's going to end up there as well. When it comes to who's going to fill in that other spot, I'm going to guess it's going to be Zach Sanford. That's the only reason I have to guess that is because he seems to have a lot more NHL experience than anybody else that they're looking at. So that's kind of how I see that fourth line shaping up. That's where I see Tolvin and Glass and Tomasino going. What do you think?
I had three names in my head when you read this question, and it was Cody Glass, Elie Tolvanen, and Zach Sanford. I also went and looked, and Tolvanen and Glass actually played 30 minutes together last year. Mm-hmm. They played in 8 games together. They played a total of 30 minutes, so not a ton of time together, but they were on the ice together for 30 minutes at 5-on-5, and the numbers are really good, like very solid. Like, very good shot attempts for 63% Corsi. Very good expected goals for 70% expected goals. 30 minutes is not a ton of time. So, like, that would go down if you give it more time. But that's really solid. I mean, like, they were sheltered. They played a lot in the offensive zone together. I don't know who their third line mate was most of the time. Probably Tomasino.
I think it was Tomasino.
Yeah. So, he'll be moved. He will move up. But yeah, Glass Tolvanen feels like a combination that probably would work. The third one, I'm just putting Zach Sanford in there because, like, that seems to be the name. What you said makes perfect sense. He has the most NHL experience. He has seniority. That's all he's got. I mean,
yeah.
John Leonard, don't know ya. Marcus Nurmi, don't know ya. Who are the other guys, those other dudes that came along? Mark Jankowski, Kiefer Sherwood. Don't know anything about you. So maybe one of those guys emerges in camp and then he's the guy, but right now it's Zach Sanford by default.
Well, and Sherwood, I believe, had a ton of offense in the AHL last season. I think when we looked, that's what we determined was that they picked him up because he had just a mountain of offense.
Well, so he'll just beat the ads all year probably. Let me throw in another question just because we're related to it, about what you just said about Tolvanen. Did you see the one from Alex Kolsty?
Yeah.
How short of a leash is Elie Tolvanen on? Do they trade him at the deadline if he continues to struggle? Here's what I would say to that. I actually don't think he has a very short leash. I think he has a pretty long leash because defensively he's been okay. That's what determines your leash. If you're bad defensively, you have a short leash. Since he's been okay defensively and pretty good, actually, like, he's probably going to get a lot of chances. Probably get a lot of chances to, like, succeed on offense. So any goal he gets into the net, like, any goal, any scoring that happens when he's on the ice is only going to improve, even if it doesn't happen at a very quick rate. Now,
right.
if his defense ability suffers, then that won't be good for him. he'll lose that time. But I think his leash is actually probably fine.
Yeah,
he's not going to be required to play up as much. He's not going to. They've got Nino Niederreiter to do that. So,
like you just said, they've made improvements to the team that really benefit the second line, that really shores up the offense, you know, down through the top nine. And with that in mind, Tolvanen was very strong defensively. I'm not concerned about his defensive abilities. I'll go back to saying that when he was called up, what made him stick around was the fact that he played solid defense. What he did away from the puck was very good. That's what they were impressed with. And, you know, you're going to take a guy like that who's been in this system. The coach is familiar with him and is confident in knowing what he can get out of him. That's a long leash. And, of course, it says, and this part of the question, do they trade him at the deadline if he continues to struggle? If he continues to struggle, I'm not sure what the benefit of trading him would be. I don't know what they're going to get for him, you know. And I say that, but then again, you know, look at what happened with Phil Myers. I mean, he's been given a contract, and they're looking at him as a reclamation project, which Nashville already attempted and I would say decided not to continue with. But he might, if he continues to struggle. I don't really know that I would say if he struggles, I'd say, you know, I think he's been fine in the role he's been playing in. If he's on the fourth line, then he's got pretty good numbers, especially if he's playing with Glass. Hopefully they can find that magic that they had for those 30 minutes and make something happen. But as long as he's playing well defensively, I don't think he's going anywhere.
I agree. How about this? How about you do one more, and I have a bonus question.
Well, the last one I have is kind of a bonus question because it's okay. Not fine. Necessarily hockey related, but this one comes from Twitter user at HouseCatsNash or NSH.
Oh, God. Oh, God. HouseCats. Oh, God.
Friend of the show. You know, big time on the Pred supporter. Big fan of Alex Doherty. I know that much.
He's big on the QTs. House Cats, yeah. you know him most from the QTs. Check out the QTs.
Just a high quality dude in general. But question was for me specifically, Alex. I don't really know if you have an opinion or if you want to chime in on this, but it says, Sean, when are you going to do a sick burnout in the El Camino? Well, we're looking at getting it running again soon. And once it's running, one of the first things I'll do just to make sure that the engine still purrs is do a sick burnout. So hopefully of course.
I didn't know that.
I've got a 1971 Chevy El Camino.
You do?
Yeah, it's pearl white. Come on.
I didn't know this.
You really didn't know that?
You have like a camper. How many vehicles do you own?
Well, I have a truck that I drive most of the time. We have a minivan that my wife drives. I drive it too sometimes if I'm feeling cool. We do have a camper, and we have the 1971 Chevrolet El Camino. It's been in the family longer than I have been in the family. My dad bought it in 1973. I was brought home from the hospital in it. I learned how to drive in it. I drove it all through college.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, I don't really want to let go of it. So we had it redone.
Just throwing this out there, we need to do a podcast episode live from the El Camino, like sitting in it.
Well, it's going to take a little bit of work, but once we get it going, we'll do it.
Not driving down the road in it, just sitting in it.
No, we're going to drive down the road, Alex.
Okay.
I can talk and drive at the same time.
Okay. I'm going to read my last question, and then I think we should award the prizes. And why don't you think about that while I
come
to this question. Because this question, I think I have an answer for it, and I think but I, you know, I guess if you want to give us your thoughts too, that's fine. But okay. The question comes from, and this is someone who has been a long time listener to the show. And right as I say that, I just accidentally deleted, I just deleted the tab that had the question in it. So give Good me a gracious. Second to pull this up because I had the question and I want to make sure it's read right. Okay, here we go. All right. This comes from at George Woodard. George okay. Woodard is a longtime listener. He's a good dude and a good person to follow on Twitter. And the question is, would a dome on a new Titan stadium eliminate Nashville from hosting a stadium series game? Could NHL select Geodis Park for a game considering its newness and similar seating capacity to the MLB stadiums they use? The second part of the question, the Geodis Park thing, I really don't think so because maybe they could do Geodis Park, but I don't think they'd want to do that. I don't think there's anything about Geodis Park that would attract the NHL. But the first question, the answer is yes, a dome. If they had a dome, they would not really be able to do a stadium series. I just don't think that when they build a new Titan stadium, I don't think they're going to want to build a dome. I think they're going to go with a retractable roof style like Lucas Oil in Indianapolis, where they can have an open air part of it for open air games. I'm sure the Titans owners are going to want a stadium that they can have open air because being in the South, it's just like, it's kind of part of the environment. But if you have an open air, you can also probably host something like a stadium series, right? Mm-hmm. Because you have it open up and then host your game. Do they build domes anymore? I kind of feel like domes are not a thing anymore. I don't think they're building domes anymore. Are they?
Do they build domes anymore?
So the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta is not a dome. It opens up.
Right. And does the one in Las Vegas opens up too, doesn't it? Or does it even have a roof?
What's it called? Not LG. What is it? The big one. I'm watching right now the stadium in Seattle, the Lumen Field or whatever. That's an open air thing.
That's a cool field.
Mercedes-Benz multi-purpose stadium. It is just double checking Mercedes-Benz. I'm pretty sure it opens up. I can't see it on this Wikipedia page, but I'm pretty sure it does open up. I don't think they build domes anymore. I think domes went out in the 80s, right?
I think so. I mean, you know, I think about the stadiums and ballparks and whatnot I grew up with. You're talking about Candlestick and the Oakland Coliseum. You know, those are just there's no dome there. So, I don't know that if there you wouldn't dome something unless you could open it up. You want a retractable roof.
But stadium series is still something the Nashville probably wants to be a part of. So I think that they would build a stadium that would be worthy of the NHL coming to visit. So I think that's the answer to that.
Well, I'm curious too, you know, could you foresee a game being played at UT?
No.
No?
There were some people who wanted to do it at Bristol. They wanted to do a game over at Bristol, like between the Hurricanes and Predators at the Speedway or whatever.
That'd be pretty cool.
It's too big. 105,000, whatever it holds. It's just too big. And I don't know that the fan base is right for that. I think you'd have I feel like no. I feel like they couldn't do it there.
Well, I mean, if you had it, you know, there, at least it's between Raleigh and here, you could play the Hurricanes and probably get both fan bases there pretty heavily. I don't know. It's a thought.
Yeah.
It's a thought.
Okay, so do you have prizes for our people?
Okay. Yes, I do. Now, I've got prize winners selected. But I haven't assigned prizes. You assign the prizes, okay? So first, I enjoyed answering this question about Mark Borowiecki. So we're going to go with one winner being at prof_rev.
Okay.
For the Mark Borowiecki question. Anytime I can talk about Mark Borowiecki, it makes me happy.
Okay.
So that's going to be one winner. We've got
what is the little box that
this is a mini Shea Weber bobblehead.
Okay. Let's give that person. Well, hang on. Let me hear all the questions first.
Okay. All right. Other winner is going to be Kyle Fleming, 326, asking one of the goalie questions because it brings a scar off into it. And that's what we kind of – all of our goalie question answers were based off of Askarov being a part of the mix there. So
okay, he gets – Kyle Fleming gets the lightsaber.
Okay. Lightsaber right here. Still in the plastic. Battery tab hasn't been removed. We're going to assume it still works. It should still work. Okay. All right. Now, the other winner here. I think we go with your question about the roof, about the dome question. That was George Woodard, right?
Yeah.
Let's give George
the bobblehead.
Okay.
Who's getting the oven mitt?
That is prof_rev or going. No,
that's fine. He can have that. Let's give another prize. Let's find another prize for.
Okay, I'll let you pick one then.
Let's give it to Ishtar Fan.
Okay, that was a good question.
I can give to Ishtar Fan.
Okay, a mystery prize, Alex.
Mystery prize is going to Ishtar Fan because it was a question about RFAs, and I think that was a really thoughtful question because I think it opened up some thoughts about what are the RFAs next year and. The money could be tight depending on how these people perform, but I think that's what we'll do.
Okay, so just to make sure we're good here, we've got Ishtar Fan getting a mystery prize from Alex. All right, we've got Prof Rev getting the oven mitt, Kyle Fleming getting the what was Kyle Fleming getting?
The bobblehead, I think, right?
And then George is getting the lightsaber.
Oh, no, you got it all wrong.
I got it all wrong.
Prof Rev gets the. I can't remember.
Look, we're here to talk sports. We're not good at giving out prizes.
I can't remember what we said, but you're getting your prize that we
you're getting your prize
for you, and we'll send it to you.
Ishtar Fan's getting a mystery prize from Alex.
That's right.
So once we listen to this, we'll put the results out there on the Twitter.
And we will do another one of these at some point. We will. I like this. This was great. These were great questions, and we should definitely do this again. So and we'll have more prizes, I'm sure. But in the meantime, thanks for listening to the show. You can check out all of our hockey coverage at AtoZSports.com. Go to the Nashville Predators section. And you can follow me on Twitter at AlexDarty1. Follow Sean on Twitter at SCSNSH.
There we go.
And we'll see everybody next week.